Good morning. Good morning. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
I know I'm told I have a soft voice, so but this should help. Right, well, we have had so much joy and celebration at the beginning of 2019, haven't we? And especially with the birth of Megan, and it's given us all a lift and a huge joy and a time to celebrate and be thankful. And we've also had huge thankfulness for Mark and Yance's visa, or rather Yance's visa. And we had a celebration praise last Sunday for that. And that was great. And when Sam confirmed with me that I was preaching this Sunday, and he said, there's no topic, but he said, it might be an opportunity for you to share your journey over the last year. So I thought, I thought about it a bit and thought, can I do it? And for me, of course, the last year has been one of sadness and huge loss. But actually, when you think about it, we think of the joy and the celebration. And that's our journey of life, in a way, isn't it? Joy and sadness, life and death. I found this little quote, which doesn't say anything we don't know already. Life is a journey filled with lessons, hardships, heartaches, joys, celebrations, and special moments that will ultimately lead us to our destination. And as we go on life's journey, we learn. And I have to say that I've been on a very huge, steep learning curve this year. And as I share some of the things with you, I pray that maybe something will resonate with you. This passage that we read about Moses, it's one that we know very well. It's one that I've read many times before. And I have to say that it's a passage that has spoken to me in different ways in past years. And particularly this passage has spoken to me over the years when, well, at the beginning and ongoing, my call to go to Africa. And at the beginning, I remember saying to God, no, not me. I was in that place that Moses was. I can't do it. So that was a huge passage that spoke to me at that time. And of course, God says, I will be with you. But in a couple of months ago, I was reading this passage again, and something very different came out to me. And I think that's the wonder of God's word, isn't it? That we actually hear different things, or we see different things from passages that we know very well. And I think what came out to me here was that God takes Moses by surprise. It was an extraordinary and unexpected event, this burning bush that he saw. He'd been in Midian for 40 years. You remember that he fled there from Egypt when he killed the Egyptian. And he had married and he'd had some children and he had been accepted into his in-laws' family and he was getting on with life, thank you very much, and looking after the sheep. And suddenly this event completely knocks him off balance. And he encounters God in an extraordinary way. And he hides his face because he is afraid. And God says, take off your shoes because you're standing on holy ground. I'll come back to that a bit later on. I'll leave that there at the moment. But this is sort of my journey, if you'll bear with me. And I'll share some of it. I can't share all of it, of course. I think you know that Colin and I had not been married very long, actually. Colin's first wife died some years ago, and our courtship, to use an old-fashioned word, was quite short because we had actually known each other for about 40 years in working as missionaries in Africa. And that I happened to be doing a bit of work in Uganda for 4 months, and I began to get rather frequent emails, and I thought, that's very strange. And anyway, so I wrote back, and Colin also was going to Kenya at that time to do something. But when we were both back in UK, we met up. And almost immediately, I began receiving from the Lord, I believe, so many confirmations that this is what God had for me. And he specifically spoke to me in very many ways, but and he was actually almost pushing me into it. And I remember one day saying to God, could you hang on a bit? Because you're pushing me into this and I need to catch up with you. But one of the things he said to me was that, see if I will not open the windows of heaven and pour out so much blessing on you that you won't be able to contain it. And I realized that I was experiencing so much blessing that I could hardly contain it. And another thing he spoke to me about was from the marriage of Canaan. Do you remember when Jesus turned the water into wine? And the steward said, you have kept the best until last. And that also spoke to me, and it's something that became very special to us, actually, that God was had kept the best until last. And when we were planning our wedding, we prayed several things. First of all, we prayed that it would be Christ-centered. And we believe it was. And then we prayed that everybody would be very happy. And I believe they were. And then, P.S., if it's not too greedy, please may the sun shine. And it did. Blessed be your name when the sun's shining down on me and the world's all that it should be. Blessed be your name. And that was so wonderful. I didn't want to think about the second part of that verse. It wasn't relevant. I didn't think it was ever going to be relevant to me. But the second part of that verse is, blessed be your name on the road marked with suffering, when there's pain in the offering. Blessed be your name. So what is blessing? Can we be blessed when we're in pain and in a dark place? And can blessing come out of woundedness? Someone said to me when Colin was first ill, actually it was my stepson said this to me, he said that joy and blessing is a bit like a prism. And I'm not very technical, and I couldn't completely understand what a prism was. But so I asked Colin, and he was in his hospital bed. And this is what the explanation he gave me of a prism. I thought Colin's explanation of a prism on the 4th of February 2018. A prism is the total refraction of light, and you get it going right across the spectrum of colors, from bright to somber, from light through to indigo and violet, the dense colors. And they all result from the same soft shaft of light being refracted through the one prism, right across the full spectrum of colours. So, darkness and light. Blessing maybe can come out of dark colours. Blessing and joy maybe even can come out of dark colours interacting with the light. And I have to say that when Colin was ill, sometimes he was in a dark valley. Well, we were walking through the valley of the shadow of death. But sometimes in the morning, he would say to me, you know, the darkness spirals upwards and it turns to burgundy and then it turns upwards towards the light. Darkness and light. Someone wrote to me at the beginning of Colin's illness, hang on for the bumpy ride ahead and choose to keep believing in God's goodness. We know there'll be dark days and you will have to dig deep for the treasures in the darkness. And we did have to dig deep. And I think we found some treasures. I maybe can share one or two with you. But one day we were talking about these treasures in the darkness and we said, you know, we're not really in the darkness, are we? We're sitting in the light. And it was quite an amazing thing. And I think that was really due to God's presence with us, but I think a lot of it was due to the prayers of so many of our friends and family around the world, and particularly here at Ruddington Baptist Church. And we are so, so very grateful to you. I think your prayers, your practical and spiritual support, I believe that God led us here to RBC because he knew that we would need to be ministered to by you. And you have ministered to us, and I thank you. And I think that the light that came out of the darkness was also due to Colin's depth of communion with God. He was very peaceful and gracious in his wonderful self until the end. And his depth of spirituality, he was almost touching heaven. He was really almost touching heaven. I couldn't actually reach where he was. At one time, when he was in hospital, he said, "You know, I'm acquiescing, but I find it hard to accept what God is doing." And this really concerned him. And we wrote that to a friend, actually it was a friend in the States, who wrote back and said, "To acquiesce is to accept without bitterness." And I think that's exactly what he was doing, his profound trust in the loving purposes of God, despite the tears and the questioning. I tried to write down some of the more tangible treasures that we found in the darkness. Sometimes they're all mixed up. so we can't articulate a lot of them. But I think one of the things was that Colin took every opportunity to point people to the Lord. Actually, he did this during his life, but particularly when he was ill. The nurses in the hospital, I remember one of them, one of them said, "I just have never heard anything like this before." And I remember there was a little Muslim carer that came to help us, and one Sunday morning she just came and sat in our sunroom after she had helped Colin get up and everything, and we were just talking to her, told her the story of the prodigal son. She had never ever heard it before, and we were able to give her Luke's gospel. We would never have had that opportunity. And then the depth of intercession that Colin had, especially in the night hours, and he said he'd never known anything like it. He'd be awake sometimes for hours in the night, and he would say in the morning that he'd just been praying, and he'd never known that depth of communion with God before. And he received messages for people. Some of the younger people that he had mentored or had a burden for, and there was a real urgency to share some of these. I think one of them particularly, he was able to share one or two, but one particularly was his niece, who was in a very, very dark place, in suicidal and in a terrible way. And he knew he had to tell her this story, and that he had. I can't go into all the details of it, but eventually she came after much trying and being delayed. And it was only about 10 days before he died, and so he was quite slow. But when I was, it was just me and him and her there. And as he was telling her this story and talking to her and giving her this message, I have never seen anything like it before. I saw the Holy Spirit go straight into her heart. And it completely changed her, actually. And to this day, she's completely changed. She's been baptized. She's going on with the Lord. And it's such a huge joy for us and for her parents as well. So those were some of the treasures, I think, that we wouldn't have had if we hadn't been in that dark place. But then, of course, since he died, there is the grief, and grief is strange. And as you know, there's a grief cycle. You go back and forth on the cycle. And it's gut-wrenching, as many of you will know, very gut-wrenching. And then there's a huge sadness and enormous loss and loneliness for the one you love. And I know many of you have experienced that. And one day I said to God something that I had never said to him before. I told God I was angry with him. And I said, "It doesn't mean I don't love you, and it doesn't mean I don't trust you, but I am angry." And I'd always thought that you should really be polite to God, and that you should not say those things. And I would always sort of say, "Give thanks in all circumstances." That's what it says in the Bible. But this time I couldn't. And it was almost like I was beating on God's chest. And I found he could take it. And I found that he just put his arms around me and didn't say anything but let me beat on his chest. And he could take it, and it was okay. And I also said to God, "You are not who I thought you were. I've known you for a long time, and now you are not who I thought you were. You are supposed to be just and fair, and this is not fair." A lot of people wrote to me, actually, several people wrote to me and said, "It's not fair." And it wasn't. And I said, "You've given me this wonderful blessing, and now you've taken it away. It's just not fair." And besides, you're supposed to be a God who keeps your promises. So what happened to so much blessing? What happened to the best until last? You've broken your promise. Why? You gave us such a wonderful love for each other. We reveled in it. We prayed together. We ministered together. We laughed together. We companioned together. And you've taken it away. There's a book that somebody sent me. And I've lost the passage. It's called God Among the Ruins. And this person sent it to me very shortly after Colin died, actually. And she said, you might not want to read it now, it might not be appropriate, but I did, and I actually devoured it. I found it so helpful. She bases it on Habakkuk, on the story of Habakkuk. And this chapter is called Wounded Ragings. And Habakkuk says, O Lord, how long shall I cry for help, and you will not listen? And then a quote from somebody called Marjorie Thompson. Christians may need explicit permission and encouragement to grieve, to shout, and shake their fist at God, as our Jewish forebears never hesitated to do. We have been taught to be polite, even toward God, whereas what we need is to be real, especially with God. And I learnt quite a lot about lament. I had never really learnt what lament was before. What it means to lament. And I'd like to just read this bit that puts it far better than I can ever put it about lament. I had always understood lament to be primarily about sadness and tears, a kind of spiritual blues song accompanied by tears and sung quietly in a minor key. But the books of Psalms and Lamentations clearly portray lament as more than broken-hearted weeping. It is also outrage and anger. It is grief and sorrow, expressed not just in tears, but in complaints and gut-wrenching honesty with God about the realities of life. It is a depth of groaning. True lament breaks open the depths of our hearts to God. It is an act of courageous faith which invites God to enter into the pain of that broken open place and to be God there. The practice of lament has been described as the most profound demonstration of trust in a loving God because it demonstrates an unwillingness to let go of God no matter how awful the situation. Lament is the opposite of despair, which gives up on hope that something can be done and that believes that God is uninvolved and cannot be reached. Lament hooks into God with hope and desperation and trust and hangs on. And it is worship. This form of worship, this offering up of our pain, honours God because it brings all that we are in the muddled mess of our lives and places it as an offering before God. Easter was very poignant for me this year. On Good Friday, I was in the parish church here for the service, and the speaker was talking about how confused and lost the disciples were on Good Friday because everything that they had put their hope in had been shattered. And she finished, before she sat down, she just finished by saying, had God lost control? And then she sat down. Had God lost control? I think at Easter I maybe got a minutest glimpse of what it meant to God, for God's gut-wrenching grief in seeing his son on the cross. And actually Jesus on the cross asked why, didn't he? Why have you forsaken me? Then on Easter day, I was with my sister in her church, and the talk was about the disciples on the road to Emmaus. And of course they were walking along being very despondent and not understanding what had happened. And Jesus came along and walked alongside them. Suddenly he was there in their grief and confusion. But they didn't recognize him. They didn't know it was him. And he said, what are you talking about? Well, of course he knew what they were talking about. What things? Haven't you heard? Of course he knew. But then they said to him, We had hoped that he would be the one to redeem Israel. And I could say, we had hoped that we would have many years of happiness together. We had hoped. But as Jesus journeyed with them, he just listened. And he said, tell me about it. He said, I'm here. He didn't give them a specific answer, but he walked with them and he opened up the scriptures to them. And how God does speak to us through his word. Isn't that true? So the time has gone, and I'm still on the journey. I haven't reached the end. I'll go back and forth. And when you're on a journey, hopefully you move forward. Sometimes it seems like two steps forward and one step back. But in recent months, I think I've begun to realize, in my sadness, just a little bit more about blessing that actually God can bring out of pain, even though you can't or maybe don't call it blessing. But the certainty that actually he is sovereign, that he is always good. You know, when Moses was confronted by the presence of God, at first he was afraid. Don't let this happen to me. He hid his face. I can't take it. And then he had to switch channels, and he had to listen, and he had to try and understand. And God said, take off your shoes because you're standing on holy ground. And then God revealed not only his plan, but his character, that he was the eternal God. And yet he was the one who wanted to communicate with Moses in a special way. That he was a God of compassion who had heard the cries and the misery of his people in Egypt. That he was a rescuer. And one who is always there. I will be with you, he said. And as I was reading this passage a few weeks ago, I thought, you know, in some ways I think, in a strange sort of way, I think I've been standing on holy ground. I can't really explain it, but anyway. Maybe I could just share a few quotes with you to finish, which have spoken to my soul in recent weeks, and they're from people who can articulate things much better than me. And they sort of encapsulate some of God's loving purposes, that some blessing can come out of pain. These are two quotes from somebody called Margaret Silf. The grace of God has found space in my life in the empty, hollowed out spaces in my heart, not in the parts of my life that I've managed to fill up with my own achievements. The fountains of God's love have become real and effective where my own defenses broke down. My breakdowns became God's breakthroughs. The hollowing out of these spaces has often been painful and heartbreaking, and I would have avoided it if I had seen it coming. Yet now, in hindsight, I can come to these pools and drink deeply from a strength and a love I could never have imagined possible. And another one about the woman who touched the hem of Jesus' garment. You remember the woman who had the issue of blood, and she said, if only I can touch the hem of Jesus. Her suffering, this woman, her suffering, becomes her personal gateway to God. If she had not been in pain, she might never have encountered Jesus in the crowd. Through her suffering and desperate need, she meets him in an intimacy she could never have dared imagine. It is our suffering that brings us to the point of such an encounter. When this happens, our lives engage in an amazing and continuous exchange of God's wholeness for our brokenness, his love for our pain. And we have hope. I heard on the radio a wonderful talk on the early morning service just a few months ago about hope in the midst of grief, and by somebody called Richard Littledale. I think he's a Baptist minister in Newbury. And here are some things that he said. In the shadow of grief, hope stands out against the dark despair of loss, like a jewel on a black velvet cloth in a jeweler's shop. Hope either withstands the white heat of human pain and suffering, or it was not worth having in the first place. Do you know, the older I get, the more I realize that there are no answers. There are only really questions. And there are many, many things that we will never understand. But God can be trusted. I've mentioned, I think, to some of you before, the throwaway comment that Gerard Kelly made at our church weekend away that really resonated with me and stuck with me. If you want peace that passes understanding, you had better learn to live without understanding. spoke to me. The day before Colin was taken to hospital by ambulance, it was the hub weekend of prayer. And we had signed up for an hour each slot, and he did one, and then later on I did one. And I've got here what he wrote that day when he was feeling so poorly, but we didn't know what it was. And I think when Ness brought all those things back here, I said, can I have this? Because this is what he wrote, and this is his writing. And he said, he had written, I praise you, Lord, for your love, which is new every morning. Great is your faithfulness, O Lord. Thank you. So now he's praising God all the time. Just one last quote. I used to think, loving life so greatly, that to die would be like leaving a party before the end. Now I know that the party is really happening somewhere else, that the light and music escaping in snatches to make the pulse beat and the tempo quicken come from a long way away, and I know too that when I get there, the music will never end.